Good afternoon, everyone. This is Mike. I'm with James, as always, on the Broker Breakdown. Today is Tuesday, June 7th, and we got a topic that is going to be top of mind for a lot of people, especially with the last week's election results here, talking about how insurance is going to, you know, possibly change a little bit, kind of unravel some of the landscape on, you know, what might happen with the Conservative Party and some of the stuff that's happened the last couple of years, and discuss all things probably auto insurance related there.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the PC party has really focused on a very vague topic of insurance, and a lot of it does talk a lot about auto insurance, because auto insurance obviously is a little bit more regulated than every other insurance in Ontario, because you legally have to have it to drive in Ontario. But yeah, I think the biggest starting point is if you take a look, you don't have to, but we have it pulled up here for us. I know I have it pulled up, but in the 2019 Ontario budget, the PCs actually put forward what's called the blueprint for putting drivers first. And I know myself, like, I kind of liked a little bit of what they did, having the electronic proof of auto insurance. But Mike, if you kind of go over any of these other like lists of things, like, do you really see anything else here that they really like put forward that they've actually like put into place? Because other than the electronic proof of insurance in Ontario, like, all these other things are almost like ideas that they kind of haven't touched on since 2019.
Yeah, I know the one piece of that I think is interesting, and I think it's a long-term battle, is there was a little bit on the fraud situation, right, which is always a talking point. Basically just being, it talks about, you know, credibility and more importantly, accountability for the evaluation of claims, injuries, you know, medical assessments. And that kind of goes into the fraud area, because there's lots of that goes on.
Oh yeah, fraud
kind of in our business, right?
Yeah, fraud's probably one of the biggest things we combat on an everyday day-to-day basis, is people using different addresses, names. Like, you know, I've even had people try to use like their family members' license, like driver's licenses, to get insurance, and then you go and look and you're like, are you serious? Like, this isn't even you.
So, exactly.
But yeah, I think fraud is obviously one of the biggest ones, and it's going to be a tough one to combat, because like, how does a governing body really try to like stop fraud from happening? Like, how, like, there's always going to be ways around, like, little loopholes that people find out about this stuff. So it's just, I know there's ways to like combat it, but like, how do you like fully eliminate it from the system? You know what I mean?
Honestly, I think that's, well, to eliminate it completely is almost impossible, right? Cause there's always going to be ways that people can find out how to, get around certain systems, right? That's just what we do in society. But I mean, that tackling it in general, I think you just need harsher punishments, right? I think that instead of it being where you committed fraud on an insurance policy, for example, that was significant, right? And not the minor things, because there's got to be a fine line between like minor and major, but like the big stuff, especially when it comes to like maybe pre-existing damage to vehicles, where people have damaged vehicles, right? And then want to get the insurance company to pay for an entire thing. And they had like four or five accidents or small things that they did, and say, oh, this is all part of the same accident. And I mean, we just need a harsher system for that. Because when you, like, let's use a ticket, for example, right? If you get like a speeding ticket and the ticket is $40, the person that gets the ticket, they pay the $40 fine. It's not the end of the world for them. They don't even care. Some of the larger speeding tickets, right, the license suspensions and the vehicle impoundment, and like, you know, whatever it is, a couple thousand dollars for those racing ones, those are bigger. Like, those are things that actually make you think, which is what people need. But on the fraud case, I mean, there's got to be more that we can do in order to make sure that those actions of a few are not impacting all drivers as heavily as it is, right? I think is the only way that I can put that.
Yeah. And the only thing I would really say to that is, when you basically get caught for insurance fraud and you get canceled for insurance fraud, it obviously comes up on your reports. no insurance company is going to touch you. You're basically going to be what's called facility at that point. So I do think like the punishment, I think long term is there. I don't think the punishment is there short term, because again, like you're not really seeing the impacts of it right away. You're seeing it on a long term basis because the insurance companies are going to be like, nope, like we're not touching you. Like the only place you're going to go if you've been canceled for insurance fraud or misrepresentation, depending on how they cancel it. The insurance companies are going to be like, nope, sorry, we're not going to take you. You're going to go to facility. Again, like in Ontario, someone has to offer you insurance on auto side. So facility is like the last resort basically for you if you have to go that route. And the premium side, I would say, is not the most eye-catching. I think Mike would agree with that. When you have to place people with facility, it's usually not very pocket friendly to easily say.
No. And on ultimately, right, no drivers really want to be there. And I think all the insurance companies, the few that have the facility associations kind of under them, I mean, again, it's like your last ditch resort to get a policy. So, I mean, even the insurance companies that do offer facility through themselves or those associations, I mean, they're doing it because they have to as well, right? So there's only so much service, you know, we'll get as brokers, and there's so much that they want to kind of help with, because these are the kind of the bottom of the barrel with respect to drivers, right? At that point.
Yeah, 100%. Kind of reviewing more of this putting drivers first kind of blueprint that they have here. They also want to enable pay-as-you-go insurance. And I think we've seen kind of some of that with companies like CAA have done that. And now Aviva has some sort of the same kind of product. So I guess that, I don't know if that would be initiated by the government or just companies kind of seeing and going in that direction, because I know CAA was first to market with that, at least in Ontario, where they have like the pay-as-you-go. And then Aviva, I think, just recently put that into market with Aviva Journey, I believe it is, where they now have that kind of pay-as-you-go. So that's kind of nice with people that aren't driving a lot, like older people that are retired. They're not going to work. They're not using their car every single day. Like the car might sit for a week or so. So I guess that kind of might be another thing that they've actually, I don't know, again, like directly changed in the market, but maybe indirectly by putting this like kind of blueprint out there, and companies kind of be like, okay, like we should probably be first on scene to like put a product like this out into market.
Yeah. I've dealt with a decent amount of clients on the pay as you go aside with CAA. I know that they've been the more predominant one that I know has been kind of marketed, right? And depending on if you're like, let's say, an older person that doesn't drive very much, they are very competitive in that space, right? They have it. I mean, one of the big things that I don't know if everyone is aware of with kind of pay-as-you-go insurance products is that typically there obviously is annual kilometer limits. So the idea is that you're a very low usage driver. I mean, if you're kind of under the 8,000 kilometers a year, let's even say 5,000 for a lot of retirees, which is quite common, you know, it can be extremely
beneficial.
Yeah, big time. And one of the benefits, or one of the things that I wanted to say on that too, was that, again, this is a big thing, is making sure that you properly market that to the right people. So as brokers, right, that represent some of these insurance companies, it's got to be the right client. Because if, let's say, you're putting everyone with a pay as you go type of product, and however they're driving 12,000 or 16,000, and maybe it's not the right
product at that point. It's definitely not for everyone. That's for sure. Like you have to be that perfect client that's going to drive that exact amount of kilometers every year, or might go over a little bit. Cause I know CAA, I think it's every 1,000 kilometers, they top you up after, and you pay like for every 1,000 kilometer increment after like that given amount that they give you. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to go over that like a lot, like it just doesn't make sense. But yeah, I think you hit like the nail right on the head there. Is go like market to the right people. And I think it definitely is beneficial for the right client.
One of the other things that I was noticing here as well, one of the bullet points, kind of reducing red tape by improving the way auto insurance rates are regulated.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's pretty vague.
I think the NDP really focused a lot on this. And what they were saying a lot is they wanted to kind of remove like gender based rating, because they still rate based on male and female. And they still rate, like, obviously we still rate for postal code. And they, that was their two biggest things, is they wanted to get rid of like gender related rate, like ways to rate. And then they also want to get rid of the postal code discrimination, as they said. They want to get rid of that. The only thing, like, it's just so hard. Like, you get rid of, I fully understand like the male and female thing. Like, I just, it doesn't make, to me, it doesn't make sense. Like, neither driver is going to be like a worse driver off than another gender, but like the whole, like, I know the postal code thing is like a pattern thing, like obviously where claims come up more and that kind of stuff, but like to get rid of that, like how do you replace, like what do you replace postal code rating with to make sure that everyone is getting rated the proper way?
Yeah I mean, that's I don't have the right answer for that for sure, because especially since me and you have been, since we've been in the industry, you know, insurance companies have gotten larger and have figured out more ways to rate, or I guess attempt to rate the client properly, right? There's like a number of different factors that go into postal code is one obviously major one, because depending on where you live, there is, you know, a higher frequency of claims and potential fraud and all those impactful factors that insurance companies look at. But to go back to what you said, how do we then divert, you know, the postal code aspect into the rest of it? So if it's me and you, James, it's the exact same driver with the exact same vehicle, but you know, let's just use an example. I live in Niagara and you live in kind of like that GTA or some of those higher risk, you know, as we all know about, right? Scarborough, Brampton, kind of Mississauga. How do we make sure that those premiums are proper for those territories, I guess,
exactly,
right?
I don't have
the answer for that.
Yeah, that's the question that I would love to have answered, because at the end of the day, like, postal code is a huge thing. The patterns that we see in the market, like if you're going to have a postal code that is claiming a lot more than another postal code, of course, like the other postal code that's not making a lot of claims should pay less. But then if you want to get rid of that, like, what do you replace that with, right? And again, I would say the PC party has been very vague, just saying like reducing the red tape to improve like the way auto insurance rates are regulated. Okay. But what does that actually mean? Right. I know like I said, the NDP did tackle that a little bit more on their kind of platform. I think the NDP and the Conservatives were more the ones that talked about it. I don't really think, like, looking from what I've seen so far, like in the market, the only other thing that the other parties talked about was the Liberals. The Liberals wanted to actually tackle the towing sector. The towing sector is probably like a whole other episode, because the towing sector in Ontario is just crazy and how and what they can do. Basically, they were saying that like there's like a bylaw in like Brampton that like basically once you hook up to a car, it's like a $300 like fee. Plus,
like a drop fee,
yeah, basically. And then, like, it's like the competitiveness, and not even just that. Like, I don't know if you've seen a lot, like in the news, like how like competitive, like towing has been, like in parts of like Toronto and Brampton and stuff, where like people are being like shot and stuff because like people are trying to like pick up cars, and like other places are like, or other towing companies are like trying to obviously compete, and it like there's actually like almost like turf wars, so to say. So but yeah, like I think the NDP was definitely the more fundamental, and like they actually had a plan, and they had a pretty in-depth plan to go against the auto insurance. And this blueprint is great, like don't get me wrong, but again, like one, maybe two out of these what, eight bulletins here have really been put into the market to like help clients.
Yeah. You know what? The one thing that I will say, and this is just kind of more of a personal opinion, but I think in general, because the insurance industry obviously has a terrible, you know, rep. When you kind of look at it, clients all hate paying auto insurance, but we all needed the drive, right? So it's one of those mandatory payments. So it's sometimes hard to flip that mentality. I think the big thing that will help is the speed. in which claims are addressed.
Oh, 100%.
Right? So, I mean, whether it's – there's a lot of different topics on that. But let's just say injuries and vehicle repairs, things like that. If you're an insurance company and you can get a client, you know, discussed the same day and brought to a shop –
But is that a government problem or is that a company problem?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they kind of, I don't know. I mean, you could have lots of conversations that they go hand in hand because, you know, there's maybe red tape with some of the insurance companies on what they, how fast they can get things done and just supply chain demands, right?
I think, like, it goes through a lot of hands too. Like, personally, I do think the claim processes are kind of, there's a lot of hand touching. Like, they're clunky. Yeah. There's so many like middlemen that you have to deal with. Like, you got to like go through like the adjuster and then the inspector goes out and then you deal with like the body shop that you're at. And then those people give you the quotes. And then it sends back to the insurance company. And then the insurance company and the adjuster and the inspector all have to agree with it. So I do believe that there are like some middle people that we could definitely cut out of that process, because I feel like that is like the biggest holdup in a lot of claims, is that the adjusters in the insurance companies and the inspectors, they just all don't communicate. They just do their job. They send it off and they're just like, "Hey, I did my part and I'm done." Right?
Yeah. It's kind of like totally off topic, but kind of like the part of the contract in Market Ray where you get the framer comes in, does the stuff, the drywaller comes in but doesn't care about the electrical guy, and the taper's coming in and say, nah, that's on the finish.
Yeah, exactly.
Passes the buck.
Exactly. It is very true. But again, like coming back to like what I brought up is, do you think that's really a government issue or do you think it's just a staffing issue on the company side? Because even like before COVID started, like we were already seeing companies have claim times that were like insane compared to like any time before in history. And even now, COVID just made it worse. Like, there are companies out there that literally, like, it takes months to pay out claims still to this day. And again, like I don't know what a government, like, I don't know what a government law or like change would do. Like, I don't know if it's more just like a company thing where like maybe they just need to hire more claim people, you know, like just get some more like grunt workers in there and just like just bang it all out, you know what I mean? Just get the paperwork done, like, because that's what I find, like, just like, there's very lack of communication that goes between the insurance companies, the body shop, the inspector, the adjusters, like all that kind of stuff. And then the clients get involved, and then there's another whole party that now get involved, the actual client that you're dealing with, not even just on the home side, but the car side, right? Like we saw from last week's episode, the insurance companies were saying it's going to take weeks, if not months, to fix all these issues that we've had with that huge weather storm we had 2 weeks ago. So, it's not a 2 week or a week turnaround for this kind of stuff. They were saying like some places it's going to be at least into the summertime before some of these places are fully repaired. So again, like, does it, I don't know. It just, I think there are some companies that I do kind of like really think, and I'm like, you know what, like, is it really going to help if the government comes in and makes a law, or do they just need to hire more people? And a lot of times it just comes down to maybe they should hire a few more people, like at least just help with the paperwork, get the paperwork off the desk of the people that actually like need to like go out in the field and like inspect or like actually do like the adjusting part or whatever it needs to be done. Right.
Yeah, you're right. That's a whole different conversation. Maybe one of these days, we can maybe have one of our adjuster partners at someone come on and have a conversation for half an hour with them about what's going on and what we can do. But you're right, for this episode, anyways, you're right. It's more of the what we see on the government political side, you know, what's going to happen with the party here moving forward with the PCs. The one thing, the one other note that I wanted to briefly chat about here, and we can kind of go back and forth on, was just the overall treatment with respect to giving drivers the choice for either receiving cash settlements if they're eligible, right? So I'm assuming that's more for like the accident benefits side of things, where, and again, this is because we're not adjusters, we're brokers, right? It's hard to completely comment on the adjusting side because you don't want to give someone the wrong insight. But I wonder if, again, if you have more government intervention on the accident benefits side, does that come down to the consumers being a good option or choice, or does that give, you know, again, like we saw back in 2013 and 2016 with accident benefit changes in Ontario, does that give, you know, lesser coverage like we've seen before to help reduce rates, which is what everybody wants, but then all you're doing is, you know, taking away those coverages again?
I think the biggest thing is people need to be aware of what they're actually being covered for, and like, and definitely like it, it's on both sides. It's on the broker side and it's on the client side. The broker definitely needs to review the accident benefit side to make sure people are aware that this is legally what you get. And if you don't increase those limits, you don't get anything more. So if you're in the hospital and something happens and your cutoff limit is this, we will, like, they do not pay after this. But a lot of people are unaware of that, and they just think, I can be in the hospital for literally unlimited amount of time and the insurance company is going to pay for it. Well, no, because the accident benefits, legally, you have this amount and you can increase them after that amount. But the problem is, like I said, it's both sides. It's a lot of brokers do not talk about the accident benefits side, and a lot of clients don't focus on the accident benefits side because to a lot of people, it's just, I want to pay the cheapest amount. It's never going to happen to me. And if it does happen to me, like, I should be covered because you're the expert. So
yeah,
I think it's both sides. But I think, yes, people need to be more aware. And I like, do I think accident benefits should increase a little bit? I do, because based off of like the economy that we're in right now and everything's increased, like these amounts are probably definitely not enough to go forward. I remember like a few years ago when I was at another office, I actually spoke with a guy that got hit by a drunk driver, and he was straight up telling me, he's like, every time now that I renew my insurance, I always review my accident benefits, because ever since then I had the bare minimum, and like, I was in the hospital, and I remember they came in one day and they said, okay, well, from today on, your insurance is not paying anymore because you hit your limit. And he's like, limit? He didn't even know there was a limit. So his, like, yeah, the person that he was with didn't even like tell him there was a limit for any of this stuff. Didn't look at any of his documents, nothing. So he basically was still in the hospital for another 2 or 3 months, I believe he was. And he had to pay out of pocket for all that time that he was in the hospital, because he just thought his policy covered it. But again, he just had the bare minimum accident benefit coverage.
But do we need more government intervention on something like that, like revised accident benefits? Or do we need, you know, like, what is that a government play with insurance right across the board, or is that more, you know, education?
I think it's both. I think education definitely, and brokers need to be more aware of it. I think clients need to be more aware of it, because again, it's a lot, it's something that a lot of people just don't think of. They just want the bare minimum or whatever it is to pay the cheapest, and that's all they want. And again, I think the brokers do need to kind of focus more on it, because in this case, like, it can impact someone's life, like, huge, because if they have to pay out of pocket for something like this after the insurance companies were paying for it, obviously it's not a very nice conversation to have. But I think the government does need to review it, because again, like, with the world that we live in, with inflation and the cost of living and everything, don't you think these limits have obviously increased since the last time we've reviewed them? Like, everything else in life has increased?
Well, yeah, and that's the one. So it's a tough talking point for sure, because for one, by giving more choice, which is what we did back in 2016 with the revision back then, we gave less accident benefits for, I think the medical rehab went from the 130 down to 65,000 for the average, the standard benefit, I should say, right? Which you have the option to increase back up. So that was across Ontario. I don't know if it was rest of Canada. No, I think it was just Ontario, right? Like, and I could
it was
be wrong.
Just Ontario, I believe, because there's like, for Quebec, for example, they don't even have accident benefit coverage. You have to like buy into it.
Right. Gotcha.
And that's like a huge problem too, because they were saying, again, Canadian underwriter, I'm there all the time, but they were saying there was an article that was like, well, what happens if you get into, if you're from Ontario or if you're from Quebec and you're in Quebec or vice versa, and one of the policies paying out accident benefits, so the other one doesn't. How does that work?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
right.
I don't know. It's like I said, I think it's definitely an education part, like education both on the broker and the client side. But I think there needs to be a review, not just like maybe from the government, but from FSRA in general. FSRA is like the governing body of insurance. Like, there definitely needs to be more reviews, because, like I said, as inflation has gone up and we've had a huge increase in the cost of living. Like those levels, again, they might not be accurate in today's world. Like you might get a lot less coverage now because the cost of everything has just gone up so much. So like maybe before you were in the hospital for a month or two and that was fine, but now it might be like a month and you're like, okay, like you're already done. Like your limits have already been hit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, there was a point there too, as part of what I was just looking at, again, on the bullet points there, the choice to receive a cash settlement if they're eligible. So, I mean, again, there would be lots of different eligibility rules and discussions there about what is eligible for a cash settlement, but giving the drivers the choice. So, I mean, I don't know if this would be pertaining to more, again, of just saying, you know, here, we're going to cut you a check for, you know, X number of dollars, utilize that as you feel is needed for, you know, the medical and some of your physio and part of your rehab and whatever's required. Maybe that helps with the claim because the insurance company just cuts the check, right? They move on moving forward and the client can use it. But is there a side where it's like, you know, it's not
enough? Is this money actually being put to a good use? Because I think that just makes fraud even worse.
Yeah.
Because you cut checks for people and then what are they using the money for? You can't track what they're using that money for. You don't know if they're actually going to get treatment or not. That's the only problem I see with that, is that I think that might make the fraud situation, because like we're not in a perfect world. Fraud happens everywhere in every system, no matter where it is. And it happens in insurance. It's a huge problem. And I've seen numerous times where people have straight up lied. They've gotten way more like accident benefit coverage than they actually needed, but they just took a check, right? They just kept paying it out because they were technically like gouging the system, right? But now if you basically like can offer like cash settlements, I just don't know. I just don't know if that's the right direction that we need to go in, because I think that might just make fraud worse. Like I can just take a check for 50K and go do like a rehab for 10K and I have 40K now and I can just deposit that into my bank and use it for whatever the hell I want to use it for, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we wouldn't know the pros and cons until afterwards, but if you're willing to play that type of a game, you're gonna, you know, win prizes you don't necessarily want, right? From an insurance company side.
No, 100%. The only other one I really want to talk about, because it's kind of an interesting topic, is the bulletin point that they said they want to enable insurance companies to offer more discounts. I don't know, like what kind of discount? What other discounts could be offered though? Because like there's multi-vehicle, obviously having two cars in one policy. There's multi-line, having auto and home together. There's multiple different policy discounts, like student discount if you like live at home or whatever and you're a good student, blah 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 blah. Winter tires. I know some companies offer like safety discounts depending on what kind of safety features your cars have. Like what else do you see in the market that insurance companies can offer? Because even going off of this, like group benefits, like there's tons of companies that offer like group benefits to clients. Like if you work for whatever, like James and Mike, like contracting, you get like 10% off your insurance with some companies, right? I just don't, like, what other discounts can you see like companies like really making to like discount policies? Because like realistically, like I just don't, like there's so many that already exist.
Yeah, I mean, I remember there's been a few that I've seen come and go. I know autonomous braking is one of them that, you know, some companies have provided, but also removed, depending on kind of where their rates are at, right? Because every company is going to have what they feel to be
important
discounts that help, right? But the thing is that those will come and go depending on, you know, what their rates should be. So, I mean, if you've offered, let's say, quote, like too many, and as a result, your rate is significantly low and you're not getting the premium needed for that insurance company. I mean, the discount conversation is always just individually insurance company based, because they're going to offer whatever they want to get the perfect client that meets their appetite. But it's very specific to them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of general ones, don't get me wrong, but there are obviously ones that are brought into the marketplace by an insurance company specifically for, you know, a type of client they're looking at attracting.
Yeah. I think for me, it's more of a band-aid to the issue that Ontario rates are the second highest in Canada. I think it obviously it's going to help people because the rates are going to decrease, but like I said, it's more of a band-aid cover up for it, because a discount's not going to combat a long-term issue that we've had, that rates have just continued to go up and up and up and up. And like, we've really done FSRA, any government's been in power, we've done really a whole lot of nothing to make sure that rates are kind of stabilizing, because they're not. They're just, especially what we classify as being the hard market. And a lot of insurance companies at the beginning of this year said that we're going to come out of this hard market. But I believe personally that the hard market is not going anywhere. If anything, it's going to stay for even longer, because again, like how our economy is going is that inflation is just so high. How can insurance rates of anything stabilize in the market that we're in? I don't think it's happening.
No, there's no chance. I mean, if you even look at the trickle-down effect, as we've chatted about last episode, I mean, there are so many catastrophic and now deeming catastrophic weather claims, right, that take months and months to kind of trickle down to the insurance companies of what they're actually going to cost at the end of the day, and then to get all that stuff back and done. There's no chance that we're going to see in the short term here rates, I think, reducing. We're going to see increases for sure on both home and auto. And I think this is where me and you and everyone in the broker space, we'll highlight that for a second, is going to have opportunity to, you know, create proper relationships with people and see if we can, you know, see if we can save them some money.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, I think we need to stabilize the market a little bit more. The discounts and all that kind of stuff is great, but at the end of the day, like, a discount is only going to be a short-term solution to our long-term problem. We have to see, like, in the long-term view, is how do we stabilize these rates? How do these rates not drastically change every single year, like they've been doing probably, I don't know, since 2016? Like, we've been in a hard market at least since 2015, 2016. Because if you look back, like before, like in 2010, like 08 to 2010, like kind of in that area, we were in the softest market we've ever been. Like, companies were just giving away policies. Like, that you could literally give a insurance company any piece of business and they would write it. And nowadays, it's like good luck trying to get a company to even sign anything that has a little bit of a gray area in it now, because of how hard this market that we're in.
Yeah, and I don't see it. I don't see it personally ending shortly. You know, we've all called different insurance companies at different times, right, to try to get maybe accommodations or whatnot. Yeah. And it seems
like, don't get me wrong, every company is different. Like, there are some companies that are, again, are very, very accommodating, very, very easy to work with. But there are other companies that are, I almost like to say, are stuck in the Stone Age, where like they don't want to make any adjustments or any accommodations if it doesn't fit within their little nicely packed manual that they have that you can never find on their website.
Right. Well, you know what, it's how business works nowadays, right? It's, yeah, you know, obviously there's lots that separate themselves from the pack, and there's a few that get left behind, right? That's unfortunate, is how it is.
Exactly. But I don't know, maybe we can end this episode off with like one thing that we both kind of would like to see moving forward, like in the insurance world. Like, what would one change you would like to see moving forward, maybe?
I mean, the biggest thing for myself, because I think we have very little say in the matter. So this is, again, more to do with how the insurance companies would like to position themselves, is just the claims experience. I want to highlight that, because we as brokers only have so much we're able to kind of help with the claims, right? Typically they go off to the adjusters and the insurance companies.
We basically just facilitate between the two. We don't ever touch the claims at all. We just facilitate between our client and then the insurance company.
I mean, yeah, you can get some customer service reps that definitely go on the phone and spend some time and try to help as best they can, but we don't make that final decision, right?
No.
So, I mean, we put a lot of faith in the insurance companies, obviously, to do the best possible claims example for everyone when a client goes there, right? That's part of the process. So if I had anything to maybe add to the industry, I would hope that we could expedite claims on everything. I know that's a very, very vague and hard thing to fix because there's lots of little internal issues on that for many topics, but that would be my biggest thing that, cause we don't have any control over that. I have zero control over that from my position.
No, not at all. No. And I agree. Like that is something that would definitely needs to be changed. I think mine, and I will harp on this till the day I die. I think the reporting on the claim side and the whole like MVRs and auto pluses, there needs to be more accountability because I find that easily half of my clients have issues with their auto plus, have issues with their MVR. We don't talk to the transportation or Ministry of Transportation at all, but we use their system. Companies can make straight up mistakes on auto plus and there's no repercussions for it. The auto plus is the most vague system in the world. They're still being used as codes, like coded numbers for like accidents and claims, where I just wish there was like a description box. You know what I mean? Like when you're doing like a claim, you can kind of type in like what actually happened in this situation. So like we can understand more as brokers, like what's going on. I just wish there was a little bit, like I said, more accountability and maybe a little bit more like expanded, like a description of what actually happened in the claim. Because then for us as brokers, we could look at the reports and be like, oh, this is what actually happened. You know what I mean? Instead of just looking at the codes and being like, oh, like I can kind of picture it together, but let me ask the client that has no, like is not going to remember. Because again, like half the people we talk to, like I'd be like, oh, you had a claim 8 years ago. Like what actually happened? And they're like, oh, I don't even remember. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, the auto pluses that we use, it's definitely tough because I've run into actually a couple examples, even this past few months where someone's had a claim, right. They submitted it to their insurance company. It all went through blah, blah, blah. The other third party who had also submitted a claim to their insurance company, they have different dates. Okay. So, and the problem with that, the massive problem when you're looking at quoting a piece of new business or helping somebody out with some new quotes is that if their claim that they submitted is a different date than what the third party said was the date, now that report shows two different claim dates. So that's the insurance companies just think it's a different claim, even though it was the same. And it happens enough where I'm making a point of it. It's not like it's happened once in my 10 years.
I might be over exaggerating a bit that it happens like every like half the time, but I would say it happens 2 to 3 times out of 10 easily. Because even for myself, like on my record, I have an accident where I was rear-ended, and on my report, it shows like 0%, like the exact date, everything. But then for the third party, the other insurance company reported her, the other driver, as not at fault either. So when I go and do insurance, when I go and switch my insurance all the time, I get the most headache because they're like, well, yours shows not at fault and hers shows not at fault. So whose fault is it? And I'm like, I was rear-ended. Who do you think's at fault? So, yeah, I just think there needs to be more accountability for companies and people like making mistakes on it and not wanting to fix it. But I also think there needs to be more of a expanded like description to it, like what actually happened, like just a small little like details box, like just like even like a paragraph or like a few sentences. Client was rear-ended. That's all I need to know. You know what I mean? So we can kind of like dissect what these like reports are saying because there's literally almost nothing to them. It's literally just like, here's the date, the car, like all their policies they've ever had, and then all these accidents or claims or whatever, but there's like nothing really to them.
Yeah, back on it just input data, right? Just data input from whoever does those claims. That's the unfortunate thing about how it kind of rolls down to clients.
No, 100%. But no, though I like those two. Definitely, those are things that I think would not even just benefit like the broker side of things, but I definitely think they would benefit like the clients in general. Like having claims being expedited and like just a better claim experience in general. But then also like when they're trying to get new insurance and go to someone and save money, like they're not having to go to their old company, get all these letters from them, prove that they weren't at fault for accidents when like that's our job. Like that's the insurance company's jobs to do. And then they just still drop the ball for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? And one thing I wanted to mention as kind of getting to the end of this too, on the, you know, how we started the blueprint to putting the drivers first. And especially now with, you know, another, the PC party back in kind of power here, we'll have to see how things unravel over the next, over the next little bit. Nothing happens overnight, right?
No, so not 100%. Like, you got to think this blueprint was put out in 2019 of April, right? And like realistically, like the electronic proof was what released 2020 in September, wasn't it?
I don't know the exact date. I just remember kind of when people started chatting about it.
Yeah, I'm just going to look up it. I'm pretty sure it was September of 2020.
Yeah. But, you know, while you're looking that up, it's one of those things where, I mean, obviously there's going to be different ideas proposed. Obviously, if there's already a platform and there's been some discussion about insurance or auto insurance, let's kind of highlight that.
Oh, you know what? It's 2020. It's actually 2019. So about, they did that in April. So I guess what, 5 months after they approved it. So I guess that's not really that bad of a turnaround. But again, like if you look at all the other stuff, there really hasn't been a lot of, like, maybe other than, like I said, as the pay-as-you-go insurance, the electronic proof of like liability slips is the only one on here that I can clearly say that like that is definitely changed.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the other pieces from what I'm looking at are very generalized on things that we would love to see in the industry.
Yeah.
It does not mean that they're specific as to like how we're going to get there.
Yeah. A vague statement with really no like concrete like evidence of how we're going to get to that point.
But at the end of the day, at least as brokers, we're kind of current on that kind of stuff as it becomes, you know, brought to light and as it becomes talking points. One of those things where, you know, we'll have to discuss it once things come on the vine there.
Exactly. So moving forward to next week, Mike, what do we got for next week?
I think we're talking about supply chain issues and how it affects things.
Because I think everyone's been impacted by that in the last 2 years. So
no, that'll be a good conversation. I'm looking forward to that. I know lots of people personally, and you might know a few as well. I know a lot of listeners might be having these conversations with friends or coworkers or their broker, but there are lots of vehicles out there right now that are on, you know, back order, and dealerships are waiting for parts or vehicles to come in. And I mean, I've spoken to a couple of people personally that, you know, it's taken months and months, and you know, there's this kind of promise that it'll be, you know, next week or next month. So there'll be a lot of conversation regarding that.
Yes. And I'm looking forward to that. Cause like I said, I think that touches base with a lot of viewers, a lot of listeners, a lot of our clients in general are kind of seeing that issue. So that'll be a good one for next week. I'm looking forward to that one.
Totally. Totally. Anything else you want to leave the viewers with?
No, I think that's good. I think we touched base on a lot of things. We kind of gave our little points at the end there of like what we'd like to see. But no, again, like I think we end off every week like this. We do appreciate you guys checking out the last week's episode. And again, if you guys haven't, definitely go follow the podcast. We release usually every Tuesdays, once a week there, basically on all podcast websites. We are, like I said, we are working on some other, the bigger ones like Apple Podcast and Spotify. We're not on there yet, but basically any other platform we are on, including like Amazon, we're on Amazon, Podbean, because we host on Podbean, Google, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podchaser. So there's a lot of places you guys can check us out. So definitely hit the follow button to get us, make sure that you guys are watching every episode as it comes out. But again, we do appreciate every listener, every download that we get, just to kind of help more people in Ontario really understand what they're getting with their insurance and really how the insurance industry is changing from a basically day-to-day basis.
Right on.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening this week. And we hope to hear you guys next week when we talk about the supply chain.
And enjoy the rest of the week, everyone.
Yes. Take care, everyone. And thank you again.